This is Digital Story Podcast number 947, May 14th, 2024. Today's theme is Third-Party Lens Extravaganza. I'm Derek Story. The floodgates have opened, and now we're seeing a wave of third-party lenses washing ashore for Sony, Nikon, Fujifilm, and yes, even Canon. This week I'm going to share with you my current favorites for the swell of great optics for mirrorless cameras. All of this and more on today's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So it has taken a while, hasn't it, for us to really get the third-party lens momentum going for our mirrorless cameras, Nikon, Sony. You know, Sony's been really good about licensing third-party lenses, so we probably have more of them for Sony now than most. OM System has some, Panasonic, of course, as well. Nikon has been really jumping on the bandwagon the last couple of years, and then now Canon has as well. However, only for the APS-C cameras, not the full-frame cameras, where the others are doing, you know, whatever. Sony full frame, yes. APS-C, yes. Fujifilm, obviously, APS-C. So it's kind of fun to see these lenses now coming to market because they do fill the gaps in our brand lens catalogs. Now, there may be a Canon version or a Nikon version or a Sony version of a lens that comes out already, but the third-party lens that does come out will be different in a couple of ways, and usually ways that consumers like. Price being at the top of that list, they're usually more affordable. They often give you faster apertures for the same price or less, and then they have some other features too. For example, one of the lenses in this list will be a tilt-shift lens for basically all the brands I'm talking about at a crazy price. Now, when I was shooting Canon, they had a couple tilt-shift lenses, and they were crazy expensive, and I got to borrow one here and there, but I never really got to play with one extensively because of the price. Well, those kinds of things are changing now. So let's get into this list. I have a few lenses I want to talk about, and I think they're all very consumer friendly, and all of us need another lens, right? Just like we need another camera, probably. However, when the price is right and it fits a need, well, then another lens is, shall we say, justifiable. All right, let's get to our list. Tamron developing an 11 to 20 millimeter F2.8 Di2 for Canon RF mount. Now this is APS-C, so it's going to be 11 20 millimeter for APS-C. Tamron has announced it's developing a version of its 11 to 20 millimeter F2.8 fast wide angle zoom lens for Canon RF mount APS-C cameras. The 11 to 20 millimeter F2.8, which is already available for Sony E-mount, will offer an 18 to 32 millimeter equivalent on Canon's 1.6 crop cameras. The company says the 11 to 20 millimeter will be available before the end of 2024. No details of pricing have been given, and this was compliments of DP Review, and I have a link to the whole story in the show notes. So this is, I think, a really nice lens for the Canon APS-C shooters. 11 to 20, which gives you that nice wide 18 to 32 millimeters. That is a nice range, but at f2.8, and the lens is very handsome. It's not too big, and we'll cross our fingers because they haven't announced the price yet. We'll cross our fingers that the price is reasonable. But Tamron lenses, of course, are outstanding lenses. They're excellent quality. They perform well optically. They look nice. Their mechanics are good. So this is really nice for Canon APS-C shooters to have this lens coming out before the end of the year, and that's the Tamron 11 to 20 millimeter f2.8. Here's a nice lens for Sony E-mount, the TT Artisan AF 56 millimeter f1.8 lens. A lightweight prime, ideal for portraiture, the AF 56mm f1.8 lens from TT Artisan is designed for use with Sony APS-C, Sony E-mount mirrorless cameras, and provides a portrait length full frame equivalency of 84mm. Capturing images in low light conditions is no issue with this lens' bright maximum f1.8 aperture. A minimum focusing distance of 19.7 inches is available. Driving the autofocus is a stepping motor, which helps enable quiet and speedy performance. One extra low dispersion ED element is incorporated to reduce color fringing and chromatic aberrations in order to achieve greater clarity and color accuracy. Now, here's the thing. It's $158. And it's available right now at B&H Photo. The link in the show notes will take you there. And then there's also a Fujifilm version coming very soon, which is great. So both for Sony E and then Fujifilm X-mount, the 56mm f1.8 lens, which gives you roughly an 84mm portrait lens at f1.8 at a very affordable $158. Over the years, some of my favorite prime lenses were right around the 85mm length. Probably when I was shooting Canon, the Canon 85mm f1.8, that lens, I was just crazy about. I was just nuts about. In fact, one of the aluminum prints that I have hanging downstairs at the studio here is from a photo walk I did in Washington, D.C., and all I did was take that Canon lens that night on a 5D Mark II, I think, maybe 5D. It's been a while. And I just shot the whole night with that lens. And one of those street shots is hanging on my wall right here. It's a very comfortable focal length to work with. You know, if you have the 85mm and then let's say you have a moderate wide, with those two lenses, you can really do a lot of good photography. It's great to see this one coming from TT Artisan, and it's great to see a $158 price tag on it. Seven Artisans releases a 50mm f1.4 tilt lens. This is what I was talking about at the top of the show here. Seven Artisans has released a new manual focus 50mm f1.4 tilt lens compatible with Sony and Fujifilm APS-C cameras, as well as Olympus and Panasonic Micro Four Thirds cameras. So this is for practically everyone, right? Sony and Fujifilm crop sensor and Olympus and Panasonic. At the front of the lens is a numbered aperture ring with the depth of field scale and the distance scale focus ring sitting just behind. And it looks really cool when you see a picture of this lens. I don't know, it looks very mechanical. That's what I like about it. Users can rotate the lens a full 360 degrees and the tilt axis moves left to right. The company has yet to confirm how many degrees the lens can tilt on either side. Although photographers commonly use tilt lenses for architecture photography, which they're so helpful for architectural photography, and to experiment with depth of field, Seven Artisans claims the 50mm f1.4 offers enough clarity for portraiture, claiming distortion of only 1.9%. And that blurb is compliments of DP Review, and I have a link to the entire article in the show notes. Now here's the cool part. If that wasn't fun enough, what I just described, it's available on Amazon now for $226. So a 50mm f1.4 tilt lens for $226, and that's if you shoot Sony, Fujifilm, Olympus, or Panasonic. They have a version of that lens for your camera. I have to tell you, that is so tempting. And when you look at the lens, and I have a link to the Amazon page in the show notes, and if you'd use that link, that would be really cool. when you look at that lens, you just go, oh boy, that looks cool. I mean, you feel like people would be coming up to you and going, wow, that's a really neat lens. Where did you get that? All right, let's go on to the next one. The Viltrox AF 56mm F17XF lens for Fujifilm X and Nikon Z. And this is going to be Nikon Z cropped sensor cameras. A compact portrait length prime lens designed for Fujifilm X mount and Nikon Z mount mirrorless cameras, the Viltrox AF 56mm F17XF lens provides a full frame equivalent of 85mm, making it ideal for portraiture. Its focal length paired with its bright f1.7 maximum aperture provides excellent control over depth of field and allows reliable shooting in low light conditions. The lens design includes 4 extra low dispersion elements and 3 high reflective index elements to reduce optical aberrations and improve overall image quality. Additionally, the lens lightweight design makes it an optimal choice for traveling. Another thing that makes it an optimal choice for traveling is $139 at B&H Photo for this lens. And the link in the show notes will take you directly to that page. $139 for, again, a nice focal length, 85mm. You can use it for portraiture. You can use it for landscape. And it's fast at f1.7. So it works in low light conditions. And it's not too big. It's not too heavy. And most importantly, it's not too expensive. $139 at B&H Photo. Right, this one is not inexpensive by any stretch of the imagination, but it sounds awfully nice. This is the Sigma 50mm f1.2 art lens for Sony E-mount. The lightest in its class and the brightest in Sigma's 50mm prime lineup, the 50mm f1.2 DGDN art lens for Sony E-mount cameras is a well-designed lens for everyday use. Driven by Sigma's dual HLA motors, this lens delivers quiet and high-speed performance. Simultaneously, this focusing system allows for a more compact design, helping make this lens lighter than its counterparts. This classic focal length, paired with an extremely fast f1.2 maximum aperture, allows users to effortlessly capture a variety of subject matter. Also, there are physical function buttons and switches that improve the lens' overall ease of use as well as its reliability in the field. To reduce ghosting and improve contrast, a super multi-layer coating is used on the glass elements. So if you want a super fast, super well-made, very reliable 50mm lens for your Sony E-mount camera, it is $1,399 at B&H Photo, and the link in the show notes will take you directly to that page. It's a beauty, it's a wonderful lens, and if you want the ultimate 50mm lens, this would be one to look at as well. All right, the last one here, and this is the one that's tempting me. There are two tempting me, actually. The tilt-shift lens for my Olympus, that one's very appealing. And then this one, which was just announced, which, oh my gosh, the Viltrox AF 16mm f1.8 lens for Nikon Z full frame. A large aperture, high resolution prime, the Viltrox AF 16mm f1.8Z offers outstanding edge-to-edge sharpness with soft and natural bokeh. Engineered for photo and video applications, this robust and lightweight lens is equally adept for photographers and videographers alike. 4 extra low dispersion and 3 aspherical elements combine to achieve outstanding sharpness while also reducing flare. The optical design also minimizes ghosting and flare when shooting starry skies and long exposure night scenes. A sophisticated LCD screen displays important shooting information, including object distance, FN icons, and aperture identification. And that little LCD on top is very interesting. It's literally an LCD on the top of the lens, or a little square. It has quite a bit of information on it, and it's on the lens, not on the camera, it's on the lens. The reviews for the Sony E-mount version of this lens, which looks like basically the same lens, just a different mount that's been out for a bit, have been very good. Photographers very happy with image quality, with performance, all that kind of stuff. And now it's coming out for Nikon Z for $549. $549 at B&H Photo, and I have a link to the product page in the show notes. So I have the Viltrox 20mm f2.8. You may recall me talking about it a while back. And I've taken it out on a number of shoots. Now, I feel like that 20mm f2.8 was a gateway drug. I really do. Because I really like that lens. It performs really well. The pictures are gorgeous with it. Very colorful pictures. And it's light. It's easy to pack. You can just stick it in your jacket pocket, no problem. You know, that kind of thing. And it was like $150. So how could I say no to it? But what it did is it sort of sold me on the quality of Viltrox and how that affordable price doesn't mean bad quality. In fact, it means good quality. And what I mean by gateway drug, now I'm looking at these other lenses like the 16mm f1.8 for $549 and going, ooh, well, if my 20mm performed as well as it does, the 16mm is probably going to be very nice. So I think Viltrox has done a really good job of getting us hooked, or at least getting us comfortable with their brand as they continue to roll out lenses. So there's a little something there for everyone. Very tempting lenses. It's great to see these third-party lenses rolling out now. It just gives us more options and more reason to take our credit cards and freeze them in ice so we can't get to them. Last week I announced our Inner Circle membership drive, and I have to say, it has been wildly successful. And we have many new Inner Circle members joining us. And I just wanted to take a moment to welcome all of our new Inner Circle members. I think you're going to have a great year with us. The online space is so much fun, and you have access to that right now. I granted that right away, so you can start interacting and take part of the conversations and share pictures and all of that good stuff. You also have your choice of attending one of our two online workshops that are coming up, either the printing workshop or the infrared workshop. And for those of you who have never attended one of our online workshops before, I think you're really going to enjoy that as well. So a lot of fun coming up for you. And then, of course, you have access to all the other benefits of being an Inner Circle member and the great feeling of knowing that you're helping to support this community. So a big welcome to our Inner Circle members, our new Inner Circle members, and know that this membership drive is still going for one more week. It ends on May 22nd. So if you were going to do that, if you're going to take part of this great offer, but oh, then you forgot, you got distracted, something happened, you still have one more week until May 22nd. And welcome our new Inner Circle members. We are so happy to have you here. Apple says destructive iPad ad missed the mark. You think? This is an article from the New York Times, and I have a link to it in the show notes. I want to read you just a little bit about it because I thought this was an interesting news story over the last few days. Apple doesn't make mistakes often and seldom apologizes, but on Thursday, its head of advertising said the company had erred in making the new iPad commercial that showed an industrial compressor flattening tools for art, music, and creativity. Quote, "Creativity is in our DNA at Apple, and it's incredibly important to us to design products that empower creatives all over the world, end quote, said the company's vice president of marketing and communications in a statement provided to the publication Ad Age. Quote, our goal is to always celebrate the myriad of ways users express themselves and bring their ideas to life through iPad. We missed the mark with this video and we're sorry, end quote. Apple's no longer going to run that ad on TV. The company had faced a barrage of criticism from designers, actors, and artists who saw the ad as a metaphor for how big tech has cashed in on their work by crushing or co-opting the artistic tools that humanity has used for centuries. They found the crushing of a trumpet, a piano, paints, and a sculpture particularly unnerving at a time when artists fear that generative artificial intelligence, which can write poetry and create movies, might take away their jobs. Apple intended the ad to send the opposite message that its ultra-thin iPad Pro could power an array of creative activities that previously required individual tools. Apple introduced the iPad commercial called Crush on Tuesday after revealing an update to the tablet lineup. Tim Cook, Apple's chief executive, said in a post on X that it was thin, advanced, and a powerful device. Quote, just imagine all the things it could be used to create, he wrote. The company, which had spent decades encouraging filmmakers, musicians, and artists to use its devices, heard an immediate outcry from that group. Well, now, I don't know if you've seen this ad yet. It's still available on YouTube and everywhere around. I mean, in this New York Times story, they have a link to the YouTube version of the ad. If you haven't seen it and you're curious about what all the brouhaha is about, you should watch it, because personally, I cringed watching it. It's all these beautiful musical instruments, paints, camera lenses, you know, just great stuff, beautiful tools for creating art. And they're just like this giant metal, I mean, it's huge, this crusher just comes down and just slowly, agonizingly crushes all these beautiful tools for creating stuff, crushes it all the way flat. Then you wait a second, and then it lifts up, and there's the brand new iPad there. So I get what they're trying to say, that the iPad can replace all of this stuff if you want it to. But oh my God, there's got to be a better way to get that message across. I mean, talk about cringeworthy. Oh. Now, there's been a lot of folks who have defended Apple and say, hey, everyone, just chill out. Come on, no big deal here. You know what they're trying to say. You know, all that kind of stuff. I have read columns where people said that Apple should not apologize for this ad. They don't need to. It's been a little polarizing in that sense that a lot of people have defended Apple in this ad. But I'm just saying, all you have to do, really, is just look at this. If you're creative, all you have to do is look at this ad and tell me, if you're watching this ad, if you're not cringing when all those beautiful things are being crushed. Now, I mean, I'm sure there was CG involved and all that kind of stuff, and they weren't really crushing a real violin. But I don't care. It's what I was feeling when I was watching this ad. So I am on the team. I'm on the side of Apple. Come on, you know better than this. Come on, use your brains. You know, this is like I used to tell my boys when they're teenagers, you know, don't be the dumb one, right? If you're going out with your friends, don't be the stupid one. I hope Apple does not repeat this mistake again, because it truly was cringeworthy. It looks like Panasonic's completely new kind of camera is coming next week, and I'm pretty darn excited about this. This article is on digitalcameraworld.com. I have a link to it in the show notes, and you can read the entire article there. I'm going to read you some of it right now. Panasonic is teasing the launch of its new camera, previously reported to be a totally unexpected kind of product for May 23rd. A surreal invitation image has been sent out in China, featuring the Lumix logo and the text, "Capture True Color." The text in the middle of the picture says, "Sincerely invites," and the name of the Chinese person, presumably a journalist. The tagline is an interesting one. In 2023, Panasonic made numerous statements about wanting to make color one of the pillars of Lumix, as you can see in this video interview, and they have a link to that. Lumix cameras have never been particularly renowned for their color rendition, unlike famously celebrated Canon Color Science, for example. So it will be interesting to see what this means. So what do we know about the camera? Previously described as a completely new kind of camera model, it is widely believed that Panasonic is entering the fixed-lens compact camera space that currently is doing gangbusters business for the Fujifilm X100 VI, the Ricoh GR3, and the Leica Q3. Unlike Fujifilm and Ricoh, though, it's thought that the new Lumix will feature a full-frame sensor, much like the Leica Compact, as well as Sony's abandoned RX1 R2 line. The question is, what market will Panasonic target? Fujifilm has clearly found great success going after content creators with the X100 VI, while Ricoh has found an audience with hardcore street photographers, and Leica occupies its usual space among high-end photographers. If I'm Panasonic, I don't know which fight I'd pick. I don't think it's going to dethrone the X100 VI. In fact, I wonder if there would be a TikTok backlash against a camera attempting to usurp the king. Still, with the announcement coming in just over a week, I'm excited to find out more and excited about the renaissance of compacts. Well, I'm not worried at all about any sort of backlash. I mean, my word, what is this? You know, are we on the playground here? If Panasonic comes out with a cool camera, then great, right? Now we have another cool camera to choose from to go along with the Fujifilm X100 VI and the GR3 and the Leica. And then we have another one. Fantastic. You can't get the Fujifilm camera now anyway, so that's not a big issue. By the way, I heard in a conversation that Fujifilm added a second factory when they were planning the launch of the X100 VI, and that it's still backlogged with the second factory. So they have one more factory than they had with the X100V, and they're still backlogged. That, my friend, is a first world problem, all right? But I think Panasonic will do a good job with this camera. I do think it's going to be a premium compact. We know they can do excellent premium compacts. They've done many of them in the past. And if they've been paying attention to what's going on in the market, which we know they have that because they're very smart people, I think they're going to come out with something that's exciting and innovative and fun and hopefully affordable too. Hopefully it won't cost too much. We won't have to wait too long for this. May 23rd, it's going to come out. I'm not worried about any backlash at all. I think the bigger issue will be, are they going to make enough of them? All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. The Nimble Photographer newsletter comes out every Thursday, and it gives me a chance to talk about stuff that I can't cover in the podcast or that happens after I record the podcast. It's a terrific newsletter. It's free. You can read it quickly. It's not too long. It's not too wordy. I try to get lots of pictures in. And basically, it's just a lot of fun. And you can also keep up on what's going on. For instance, I talked about the membership drive in the last one, which is nice because all the links were right there and all that sort of stuff. If you want to sign up for the newsletter, all you have to do is either go to thenimblephotographer.com or go to thedigitalstory.com, click on newsletter, and we'll get you signed up right away, and you can start receiving it this coming week. We're in the middle of our membership drive for the Inner Circle, but I also want to take a moment to thank our existing Inner Circle members. These are the folks that have been supporting this community and this podcast every month for a number of years now. I so appreciate your contributions. I so appreciate hanging out with you on our Inner Circle site. And I just wanted to thank you for your continued support. And finally, hats off to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. So one of the two online workshops we have coming up is the Inkjet Printing Workshop. Red River Paper is going to be involved in that workshop. They're going to help us in so many ways with content, with the latest in inkjet printing. They're going to help us in terms of understanding the printing process, choosing the right paper for the projects we want to work on, and just helping us understand how this works. I think one of the challenges that photographers have with printing on their own is that they don't really understand all those little settings and what differences it makes when you go from one setting to another setting. And one of the cool things about Red River Paper is that they are educational. They believe that the more you understand about inkjet printing process, the more effective you'll be and the more fun you'll have and the better your prints will look. And that's been one of the tenets of their site and how they function from the time I've known them, which is basically forever now. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story where you can go and see for yourself. You can learn about printing there. You can learn about all the different terms that you may have been wondering about. And of course, you can buy paper and ink there as well, some of the finest paper in the world at a very affordable price. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.